Welcome, everybody, to episode 2 of the Alternative Lies podcast. I am your host, Marcus. I am joined once again by my illustrious co-host, Rex Putnam. How you doing, Rex?
I'm doing great. Thank you, Marcus. I appreciate you having me on again.
Of course. I think as long as you don't screw anything up, you'll be a recurring fixture.
No, I have nightmares about that, but we won't get into it.
Yeah, that's for your therapist.
Yeah, welcome back to Alternative Lies episode 2. I hope you enjoyed our first episode. In this episode, we're going to get into voting. We're going to develop what I would say is going on in the current status of 2018 and how people are voting and what's being done to, you know, maybe suppress their vote or being done to not suppress it, amongst other things.
Yeah, and that's going to be our general outline for this episode. We'll, one, talk about the voting that we all hopefully just did in the 2018 midterms. We'll talk about some of the notable events that surrounded that, and then we'll get into the general concepts of things like voter suppression, gerrymandering, and other sort of tactics that have been used predominantly by one party, but in terms of history, both parties have employed these tactics.
Yeah,
too.
On both sides, really.
But definitely, I would say the Republican Party uses
very
these
fine
tactics.
People on both sides.
Thanks, Donald. Glad to have you on the podcast.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it's been predominantly, I think, performed by the GOP. We have seen some gerrymandering on the Democratic side, you know, and certain maps are more favorable to Democratic elected positions, but, you know, not necessarily always, probably heavily leaning towards the GOP side of things.
Yeah, and for our listeners, just as a disclosure, we're a pretty liberal leaning podcast. So, you know, take that with an appropriate mountain of salt.
Okay, so let's get into how the midterms went. A couple weeks ago, we were proud to be broadcasting on Election Day, actually, and we brought you some live updates, but things have pretty much settled, and we've gotten into exactly what the elections and how they went. So
I think really the first and most notable topic to talk about with the midterms is the blue wave, and it has most certainly crested as it stands today. There are three undecided House races for the federal House, but the Democrats have gained control of the chamber with a net total of 38 seats.
38 seats, which is really unbelievable. After the midterms, you know, a lot of House races got settled and they mostly went Democratic.
They did. And there were quite a few that were extremely close and couldn't be called right away.
Yeah.
And there's, as we talk, there are still three undecided, one leaning Democratic and two leaning Republican, but the margins on all three of those are within 1%.
Which is insane.
One that I think is running counter to the narrative of, oh, my vote doesn't make a difference. My vote doesn't do anything.
Absolutely. When it comes down to razor thin margins and it's, you know, the difference of literally 100 votes, your vote absolutely matters.
And I believe there was a race, and I don't remember what state, but it was for the state house where a Democrat won by a single vote.
Yeah, was that in 2018?
Yeah,
or
it was just in this midterm.
Okay, that's interesting because I also remember hearing about something similar happening back in 2016, or maybe it was a runoff race or something like that, and it would have been a tie, actually.
Wow.
Yeah, I'd have to look up that and the source on that, but it was really interesting.
But it seems like these events, you know, examples like this keep popping up again and again. That just goes to show that this is not just a one-off phenomenon, that if you vote, there's a pretty significant chance that it'll matter.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was reading that more ballots were cast in this 2018 midterms than there were for Donald Trump in 2016.
Yeah.
Which is insane in a midterm year where historic election turnout has been very low. I think in 2014, the election turnout was as low as like 14% or something like that of
the
eligible
voting
population. Right. And that's starting to change. And people are starting, I think, to realize that when they vote, it matters. So it's really interesting to see what played out in California, actually, in the Orange Coast or Orange County area, which was historic, you know, Reagan Republican territory.
Yep.
Every single House seat there was flipped to Democrat.
And I have a good friend of mine who actually lives in, I think, California's 49th, whose incumbent was Mimi Walters, another one of those Orange County Republicans who just lost re-election to a Democrat. And it was sort of the prevailing sentiment in Orange County, from what I heard anecdotally, that a lot of the energized Democratic voters were really proud and excited to have actually gone out there and made a difference and made such a significant change in the federal, you know, House landscape of California.
Yeah, I think it's a general level of excitement, but also a really interesting op-ed penned by the ex-California GOP leader, which basically said that, you know, the party in California is not salvageable. She explained that, you know, as it stands right now, GOP politics in California are just dead.
Yeah. Well, and part of that, of course, as I think she states in the article, is how the phenomenon of Trump and just how toxic and vitriolic the Republican Party has really gotten has led and perhaps even accelerated that downfall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that there's a lot of people, you know, on the more moderate side of things in the GOP there that don't identify with what the party has become today. You know, because it really isn't the same party that it was 20 or so years ago. And I think those people are just fleeing and they're realizing that the party essentially has left them. And that's pretty interesting in that sense, because it leaves a big opening for Democrats or more moderate, you know, individuals. Right. So that's how the election cycle went this year. And it was particularly beneficial for Democrats. We're going to get into now, like, what people have been doing to prevent voting in this election cycle and what we can do to kind of step away from that and reamplify the Voting Rights Registration Act.
Yeah, an updated Voting Rights Act would be fantastic. And I believe that's one of the immediate priorities of the incoming Democratic House.
Yes.
Is to at least draft some of these updated pieces of legislation, including an updated Voting Rights Act, even if it gets voted down in a now Republican-controlled Senate, or, you know, ostensibly vetoed by our maniacal idiot of a president. That's definitely on the Democratic legislative agenda from here on out in the future.
Bringing it to the forefront is really an important aspect of, you know, bringing that legislation into the House, and even if it does fall flat, it's still important to bring that.
It gets people thinking about it, talking about it, and sort of changing up the finer minutiae and the details of this legislation to make it more amenable when Democrats do have enough complete control to actually pass it and get it signed by a Democratic president.
Absolutely.
And just to touch on the Senate briefly before we head to our talk about actually, you know, the act of voting and how that goes for people in the Senate, we had a pretty interesting series of flips, and there's still one race to be determined, which is the Mississippi special.
Mm-hmm.
And
went off into a runoff, right? Yep, that'll be happening
between Cindy Hyde-Smith, the Republican frontrunner, and Mike Espy, the Democrat. And this actually has been drawing a lot of comparisons to last year's special election in Alabama, where Doug Jones pulled ahead of known pedophile Roy Moore.
Yeah.
Where the Republican frontrunner in the Mississippi special, Cindy Hyde-Smith, has made quite a few alarming comments, both recently and in years past. The most recent comment she made was that if there were public hangings still being held today in Mississippi, she would be sitting front row and center.
She wanted a good view of that the lynching, you know, that was going on. I actually heard that Walmart called her and said they want her donation back.
You know you screwed up when the Waltons want their political PAC money back from you.
We want our political money back. We don't want to cast
our
vote.
You're too toxic for our brand of Republicanism. Oh, and then there was another article that just came out today where she's photographed holding, I think, a Confederate flag and other Confederate memorabilia, saying that it was Mississippi's history at its finest.
Hmm.
So needless to say, I think there's partially an aspect of trying to pander to those kinds of voters, but then there's also another sort of more sinister component of the fact that she probably has believed this for quite a long time.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I'm sure she was born and raised in that and kind of steeped in it. I don't understand why you would try to identify with those people. I mean, if they are really that big of a voter base, there's something wrong with that state. You know, there's just something wrong with that.
Well, and I think the Trumpian rhetoric has only amplified that.
Really amplified
those
kind
of voters out of the woodwork.
Hate crimes are on the rise, unfortunately. And I think that's kind of been stoked by Trump in office and what's going on.
I believe the phrase is stochastic terrorism, where the president or other prominent Republicans can just say this awful, horrendous stuff. And after that happens, it will almost push or compel the crazies to, you know, grab their gun and go do something.
I mean, you take a look at Cesar Sayoc and you just look at that man's van. I don't know if you got a chance to look at the van that he was driving around before they apprehended him. For reference, Cesar Sayoc was the guy who mailed all these Well, they were unexploded mail bombs.
Oh, the MAGA bomber.
The MAGA bomber. Yeah, that's correct. He mailed them to George Soros, to President Obama, to Hillary Clinton. I mean, the list goes on and on. But this man was driving like a white delivery van, just plastered in
with
MAGA stickers.
I mean, propaganda.
It was incredible, actually. I don't even know where he got all of those stickers, but, you know, Hillary Clinton's face with a crosshair on
it. Yeah, targeting reticles right between her eyes.
Yeah, and Trump, like, commanding a tank that was targeting Hillary Clinton.
Like, this is just some dear leader stuff going on right now. Like, yeah. It's very reminiscent of just how brainwashed people are in, you know, totalitarian regimes like North Korea, where people just have that, you know, my politician can do no wrong sort of mindset.
Yeah, I mean, it's,
you combine that with mental illness and you get Caesar Sayoc.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, that man did have a mental illness to sorts. And I heard from one of his previous lawyers that essentially admitted that he was a little boy in a man's body, I think is the way he put it. And then when asked to clarify, he meant that he was referring to his mental disabilities. So, I mean, clearly mentally ill.
Yeah, his mental faculties weren't there. But anyways, to bring that back all the way full circle, in terms of sort of the voter base, the Republican voter base made its vote and opinion known in a couple of states, which wound up in Republican flips in the Senate. Most prominently, North Dakota, where Kevin Cramer beat out Heidi Heitkamp.
By quite a large margin, actually, 10% almost.
10%. And as we'll get into later, voter suppression definitely had its role in that.
Yeah.
The state of Missouri, where lucky Claire McCaskill couldn't pull it off this time. Her previous election, she won by, I believe, less than 1%. She only won by maybe 10, 15,000 votes. Mm-hmm. So the Democratic Party of Missouri was hoping she could pull off a similar feat, but unfortunately, she lost by a pretty considerable margin in Missouri. A slightly unexpected flip in the state of Indiana, where Joe Donnelly lost to Mike Braun. And then Florida, which has been the epicenter of voting catastrophe since the year 2000, reared its ugly head yet again and proving why the rest of the contiguous U.S. and Alaska and Hawaii just don't like Florida. But Rick Scott has officially beaten out Bill Nelson in the hand recount by a margin of 12,000-ish votes and
12,000 votes. Can you imagine that? The population of Florida, or at least the voting population of Florida, is over 8 million. It came down to 12,000 people.
It really did. And part of what the Floridians actually just passed on their state-level ballot is the felon disenfranchisement measure, where now felons who have been convicted are able to vote again. And that,
right, after they've been rehabilitated.
Exactly. And that
released
numbers,
back into society.
That's like 1.2 million future voters now in the state of Florida, which is going to, I think, make the difference, assuming no other shenanigans are enacted in future elections.
So if you do get caught with bath salts and you do your time, don't worry about it. You can vote later.
Yeah, if you do something inappropriate with an alligator, fear not. It'll be okay. Good old Florida.
Right. But no, I mean, that's a huge thing. There's a lot of people there that, you know, they made mistakes when they were young and then they've been rehabilitated. They've been proving that they were good citizens and, you know, they should have the right to vote back. And it's my opinion that that shouldn't be completely barred from them for life.
Well, and the residents of Florida agree with you. That measure passed overwhelmingly.
Yeah.
On the Democratic side of the Senate, we did have flips in Nevada where Jackie Rosen beat out known mean man Dean Heller, who was notorious for turning away cancer patients after his yes vote on the Obamacare repeal.
And they had it coming.
Well, you know, I mean, if they have cancer,
they asked for it, you know.
Yeah, let's victim blame cancer patients some more, don't we?
Hey, I mean, nothing wrong with that.
Do it. He made it normal.
No, I mean, yeah, that's the kind of mentality these people have, and it's awful, right? I mean, you can't control that. In this day and age, I just don't understand why we're arguing over pre-existing conditions, to be honest with you. It just doesn't make sense. But
again, that's another episode.
Yeah.
And then Arizona, one of the Democratic flips that I was happy to contribute to, as that's where my ballot was cast. We had Kristen Sinema beat out Martha McSally by a relatively slim margin of 30,000 plus votes. And that's a historic first, as she is the first female in the Arizona Senate in 25 years. She is also the first openly bisexual senator to be elected into the Senate. And I believe, I don't know if she's prominently atheist, but she has never listed any religious affiliations. That might be another third first for electoral term. But The hidden gem of the blue wave, which I have been telling everybody left and right that people should be paying more attention to, is the governor election results for the for this round of midterms, where there were quite a few governorships up for re-election, and there were seven Democratic flips: Nevada, New Mexico, Kansas, Wisconsin, Michigan, Illinois, and Maine all have Democratic governors now. And after that, the majority of states in America now have a Democrat for governor.
Hmm. Right. I think you mean the majority of people living in the United States?
Yeah. Okay. I think,
right.
I might have misquoted that statistic.
But yeah, I mean, 49% of the population governed by Democrats, and only 47% governed by Republicans, which is pretty huge. So,
and that is definitely going to go a long way towards undoing some of the manipulative vote suppressing tactics that we'll talk about later.
Mm-hmm.
Governors have a lot of power in regards to that. So definite progress has been made with a blue wave cresting in the gubernatorial mansions across America.
Yeah. Sweeping out everyone else as crests and,
yeah, getting rid of all that nasty GOP dust that's just been lingering around.
Yeah, what's the just the sea garbage? What do you call that? Flotsam and jetsam. That's essentially what the blue wave did. Is it crested, carried them away, and took out all the flotsam, jetsam back to sea.
Yep, float sand, the wreckage of a ship or its cargo found floating on or washed up by the sea.
That's basically all the GOP candidates that lost. They're just going out to sea now.
Well, the alternate definition, which I think is more apropos, people or things that have been rejected and are regarded as worthless.
Yep.
And the voters certainly made their voice heard there. So with that being said, let's just go ahead and open up the discussion into what's all been going on as far as things like counting votes, as far as gerrymandering, vote suppression, you know, what all has been rearing its ugly head in these midterm elections. What comes to mind, Rex?
Well, and not just in these midterm elections, but it's been going on for quite a while. I mean, think back to the 2000 election when, Gore lost by
a handful,
a slim margin, just by a handful of votes.
Well, and that was the good old hanging Chad scandal. We're staring at an article written in Esquire, and it has a picture of ballots being looked at by election board members. And that was the whole scandal back then, was hanging Chads made it very unclear on the Florida ballot all the way back in 2000 who actually voted for which candidate.
Right. And the Supreme Court halted a recount in Florida, which would have determined the election results.
And I think it's commonly believed that Gore did win Florida,
mm-hmm.
but the Supreme Court intervened to stop the recount, as well as our good old friend and dark prince of GOP magic, Roger Stone.
What a man.
For those listening, we'd recommend watching the Netflix docuseries Get Me Roger Stone.
Absolutely would. It's phenomenal, and it really dives into what kind of a role Roger Stone has been playing. You know, because you honestly wouldn't think that crackpot would have any role in politics, but believe it or not, he is very effective, and he is changed the way things are today.
And he's been working behind the scenes. And the reason why we bring him into this conversation about the Florida situation in 2000 was because he was actually pretty essential to that, where he staged a riot called the Brooks Brothers riot.
Yeah.
Where
intimidated the recounters.
Yeah. The people actually counting the ballots were intimidated and were afraid for their literal safety because there was a group of angry rioters, you know, banging on the doors and screaming mm-hmm. outside the area where they were doing the recount.
Yeah, I think they actually pushed their way into the building in which they were doing the recounts, and the people doing the counts were kind of in another room.
Yeah.
And it was with a transparent glass. They were just banging on the glass and demanding they stop counting votes. And
it was almost like something out of a zombie movie where the horde's just bearing down upon
right.
you. And you have, you know, one door and a transparent glass window in the way.
Where's Will Smith with his grenade ready to take out the
Brad
horde
Pitt
of zombies?
Can of Pepsi from World War Z.
Yeah. I mean, but how terrifying would that be? You're just trying to simply count votes and you have this angry pitchfork mob outside just bearing down on you. Of course you're not going to finish.
Yeah, you're just trying to do your job.
Yeah.
But that's one of many insidious tactics that have been employed, historically speaking, to disrupt the electoral process.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we really wanted to go with this, is let's just provide an overview. That not being, you know, that's important to mention, right? The fact that physical intimidation of people counting votes and sort of disrupting the literal process is one of many tactics that has been used.
Yeah. And I mean, that goes all the way back to 2000. It's been happening for quite a while. In fact, that's why the Voting Rights Act was passed back in, I believe, 1963.
I'll check that.
I need to double check that. But it was passed, and that was to allow disenfranchised people to be able to cast their vote. These were individuals who, you know, were minorities, people of color, and they were targeted in a way that would suppress their vote. You know, they were required to take ridiculous exams that were confusing and intentionally misleading in order to disqualify them from voting.
Yeah, well, and that was 65,
yeah,
the internet. And then Nixon passed some amendments to it in 1970 that lowered the age to 18 and helped get rid of some of these other restrictive amendments or provisions that had been employed previously.
So it's been a problem for a while, and we, you know, thought we did something about it with passing some legislation through Congress. That was all great and all, but in 2013, that law was just essentially gutted.
Thanks, Roberts.
Took all of the fangs out of the bill, and now we're kind of seeing a resurgence of a lot of the similar tactics that were used back in the day to suppress individual votes.
What Rex is referencing is a 2013 Supreme Court decision by John Roberts.
Right, the swing justice.
If that's what you want to call him, I have some less appropriate names that I would like to call
him. I mean, this isn't effectively what a court, and it was entirely decided by one individual because everyone was going to vote down partisan lines except for this one person, and he historically leaned more conservative than he did liberal. But
let me pull up an article here from the New York Times that describes what portion of the Voting Rights Act, where did it go? There we go. It allowed states, it set a precedent for states to change their election laws without federal approval.
Yep.
And that's what has led to a lot of the tactics probably employed in, you know, sort of think tank collaboration of people like Lee Atwater and, you know, the people who invented the Southern Strategy, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Voting Rights Act provision that was repealed by the Roberts Supreme Court was in 9 states, mostly in the South. So the South was sort of the guinea pig or the breeding ground for
right. It basically gave them agency back in order to determine how they ran their elections. And when this Voting Rights Act was in full force, they were obligated to pass all changes through the federal government.
Yeah.
And when this was repealed, Justice Roberts ruled and said that, you know, discrimination in terms of voter suppression isn't as prevalent as it was in 65, which is wrong, but he, in his ruling, said that that's the case and that the state should have the right to handle how their elections are done.
Yeah, it's the old Republican states' rights argument. My states' rights.
And then they immediately went back to doing what they're doing.
We immediately went back to Pre-Voting Rights Act 1960.
Right.
And I think the most tangible component of that was the ability to redistrict and draw the state maps without federal approval. Mm-hmm. That is the impetus for gerrymandering.
Also, it's gerrymandering, which is packing and cracking. There's a lot of strategies involved with gerrymandering. It's pretty interesting when you get into the analysis of it. But packing would be to pack members of a certain demographic who you know are going to vote one way into a district. And cracking being pulling those people apart, drawing their districts around them in order to swing the results of an election one way or another.
Dilute a particularly strong concentration of opposition.
If you know you've got a lot of, say, liberal voters in a metropolitan area, and you're almost sure to lose that district, you're going to pack them all into one district. So you only lose one district instead of, say, 10.
Right.
But if you are able to crack that apart and dilute that voter base into all 10 of those districts to where you know that they're going to go Republican or Democrat one way or the other,
right,
you might crack them apart.
Yeah. Well, and that has a sort of synergistic effect with some of the other tactics where if they draw, they being, you know, state legislatures, if they draw their districts a certain way, they'll know that, you know, District 9, and that's just a hypothetical number, but, you know, if they're referencing District 9, it could be one of those districts that they've drawn to purposely have a majority of people of color or more poor Democratic
voters.
Who
they know they'll vote one way or another. I'm typically more liberal than conservative.
Exactly. And that provides them sort of the laser focus targeting for their voter suppression efforts to get out and suppress the vote instead of get out and encourage the vote.
And this has all become, I'd say gerrymandering has been prominent, but I think it's become a lot more prominent in the recent past because of things like data analytics that allow them to analyze all of this information and use it to the best of their ability. So whereas gerrymandering at one point in time was kind of more or less a shot in the dark, you obviously knew who lived where. You don't know like you do now. You don't know the exact demographic, the down to the exact percentage of your chance of losing a district if you do draw the lines one way or another. So it's really interesting how it's become such a prevalent thing in 2018.
The term gerrymandering is actually kind of hilarious because it dates all the way back to 1812, believe it or not. It's a portmanteau of the word salamander and the last name of a particular governor of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. It was Governor Gerry, G-E-R-R-Y. But what this dates back to was the fact that when they were drawing the districts all the way back in 1812, one of the districts that was selectively drawn for this governor happened to look a lot like a salamander.
Right.
And that's a characteristic of modern day gerrymandering, where you can take a state's map and just look at it. You know, if you, whoever is listening, just go Google, you know, your state district map. You'll see there are some districts that look pretty bizarre. It looks like a just convoluted mosaic, or even like a bad acid trip, depending on the state.
They're not drawn on any, you know, physical existing barriers, no like rivers or around city limits or anything like that. They're just, like you said, a patchwork of districts that are essentially meant to benefit one party.
Yeah, it's a solely politically driven map. Then you can tell based on who lives where, and that's how, again, they know what to do.
And this was right before the 2018 election. Pennsylvania's Supreme Court actually said that the district map needed to be redrawn by an independent, group of analysts.
Because the
map was so previously gerrymandered that it was determined by the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania to be illegal.
Perhaps even more interestingly, I think this is actually North Carolina, but in that same vein, North Carolina also had to submit some redrawn maps to its state Supreme Court, which has recently swung Democratic.
Mm-hmm.
And the people, or you know, the group of people in charge of doing that, had actually resorted to computer drawn districts where, based on simple population, you know, they fed it into an algorithm that would try to represent the populace most fairly in terms of district shape and population per district and things like that, to try and make it, you know, even and standardized across the entire state. And if you just compare those pictures, like the before and after, it's two completely different maps. And I would assume that the Pennsylvania maps probably not as significant, but I'm sure just looking at them, any old person could tell, you know, there's a lot of differences in the shapes and the sizes of these districts.
Sure. Yeah. So that's one of the tactics that they've been using recently. I mean, I think that in the 2018 election, one of the biggest highlights of voter manipulation was in the Georgia election for governor, the Secretary of State, Brian Kemp, who oversaw the election, was actually running for governor himself.
Yep, you had that conflict of interest. The man in charge of his own election was running.
Was administering the election.
Yeah.
Which just, I can't believe that that's acceptable. It doesn't make any sense to me at all, but...
Well, and that, I think, speaks to the fact that in the future, if there's enough Democrats in the Georgia state legislature, they should pass legislation to prevent that from happening again. But again, this is one of those scenarios where you couldn't have made it up.
No. Like,
you could have never foreseen this.
So, yeah, this is a race between Stacey Abrams and Brian Kemp. Brian Kemp being the Republican, Stacey Abrams being the Democrat. And Kemp was the Secretary of State of Georgia.
And I'm not necessarily sure what Stacey Abrams' background was. I think she was involved in education. Don't quote me on that. I could be
right. I know that
wrong.
It would have been a historic event had she won the election. She's a black woman, so that would have been very, very big. And then, you know, in Georgia, there's never been.
Okay, no, here we go. Politician, lawyer, and novelist who served as the minority leader of the Georgia State House from 2011 to 2017. So she's been a state level politician for quite a while.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, had she won, it would have been historic. Unfortunately, mostly due to voter suppression, she did not win. It came to a very close margin. It was pretty razor thin. There was a recount.
Yeah, I believe it was an automated recount. It didn't come close enough for there to be a robot recount.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's another variance of state election law. Florida, for example, has some pretty strict ones as far as percentages and what kind of recount they lead to. I think the laws are a little bit more lax in Georgia, but that's besides the point.
So, yeah, I mean, on election day, there were election stations that were moved last minute. They were moved far away from voters.
Yep.
When voters got there, the polling machines were broken down. They had to wait in line for hours and hours.
Yeah, I know there was one polling station in Georgia that intentionally left polling machines in the closet that were perfectly functional.
Right.
And they just, to, again, suppress people's vote and to prevent people from voting, they just limited the number of available machines at this polling place.
Mm-hmm. I mean, imagine how successful that would be. You're just an average person and you have to work 9 to 5 in order to survive. And you need to vote. No, you don't need to vote. You should vote.
Yeah,
but
you want to vote.
You want to vote. Are you going to be able to just take the day off to spend 6 hours at a polling station, you know, maybe 10 miles from the closest public transit that is available to you?
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't necessarily have a car or a way to get there.
Yeah, that's another, you know, the geographical and, you know, spatial limitations. You know, the polling station closest to you could be, you know, 10, 20 miles away. You could be, like a lot of people in America, you know, you need that paycheck. You can't take the time off work to go vote. Because in America, election day is not a holiday.
No.
And in most other countries, there's dedicated time where people either get paid and can not go to work to vote, or they just don't have to go to work, period, and they spend their time solely voting. I think it's Australia where you pay extra in taxes if you don't vote.
Oh, really?
So it's almost compulsory that you vote, or you, it's sort of like the ACA, right? You get health insurance or you pay a fine.
Yeah.
I mean, you can make a good case for, in America, you should be able to vote or you pay a fine.
Oh man. Imagine uproar. I mean, just the Affordable Care Act alone and the,
my small government,
my voter suppression,
anything but my voter suppression.
Gosh, letting the minorities vote? Oh, no, thank you.
I for one, prefer my 1860s voting rights. Dear Lord.
Oh, God. I mean, but really, I mean, in 2018, that shouldn't be a question of, oh, well, is that even plausible to pass as legislation? Because it should just be a given.
Yeah, like regardless of party, regardless of how you
lean,
want
your constituents to be able to vote. Yeah.
It's enshrined in the Constitution. Like, you should be able to vote,
right?
Period. Regardless of who you vote for, you should have the right to vote. And the fact that that's being taken away from anybody is shameful.
Yeah. And I'm going to say it, but I suspect because the GOP would not be anywhere close to in power had they allowed everyone to vote.
Exactly. As I always tell everybody, GOP no longer stands for Grand Old Party. It stands for gaslight, obstruct, and project. So this is a very big case of the O for obstruct, as in obstructing the process of voting through these tactics.
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't have governors who are Republican if you didn't have voter suppression right now.
Yeah. Well, and again, let's
go back to Georgia.
Yeah, let's go back to the Georgia election again. On voting day itself, right, one of the other popular voter suppression tactics that has been enacted across America but is prominent in Georgia is voter ID laws, where in order to vote, you need a valid voter ID, which in many cases does cost money and is a modern form of the old poll tax that was repealed God knows how long ago. That's another, because if you can't afford to buy a voter ID and you go to your DMV, you can't vote.
Mm-hmm.
And in this election, when Brian Kemp himself, the architect of his state level voter suppression,
this was
tried
the
to go
Republican
vote,
candidate.
The Republican candidate, his own voter ID wouldn't work.
Yeah.
And he had to go, because he's the Secretary of State, he can just get another one on a whim, right? He had to go get
Voter ID
on the same day. And the second one, of course, worked just fine.
And interestingly enough, it was the same for Stacey Abrams on the Democratic side when she went to vote.
Yeah,
she was no longer allowed. They said that she would have to cast an absentee ballot.
Yeah, it said that she had signed up to cast an absentee ballot instead of an in-person ballot. And because of that, they wouldn't let her cast an in-person vote initially. And then they had to talk with that polling station's, you know, manager. And because she's the candidate of the other party, they let her, of course, cast an in-person vote.
Yeah.
And that was
at least
an issue.
Her vote counted.
That's more than you can say for a lot of other Georgians, which is the sad part. But again, when the two candidates, when you're voting, when you're suppressing votes so hard that the two candidates can't even vote for themselves, that's ridiculous.
No, that's successful.
It's
Brian Kemp did his job.
He did a little too well, if you ask me.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and this has been ongoing. It wasn't just Kemp and his current installment as Secretary of State or now governor, but it was his predecessors as well. I mean, this is something that has been going on for quite a while, and they've been slowly turning the crank. Yep. And instituting all of these policies that.
Yeah, another example that comes to mind is the state of Texas. They're pretty notorious for very restrictive voter ID laws that have been enacted and supported by both their governor and I think their secretary of state, and maybe even defended in court by their attorney general. But Texas is another prominent example. North Dakota, that's another recent one. Mm-hmm. In 2018, where there's a large Native American population who live on reserves in the state of North Dakota.
Right.
And the state legislature ruled before midterms that those voters wouldn't be able to vote.
Because they had P.O. box addresses, and that you couldn't register to vote using a P.O. box. And since many people on the reservation don't have, you know, physical addresses, right, they couldn't be registered to vote.
Yeah. And they needed that physical address to get a voter ID. Mm-hmm. And of course, because of that, I mean, let me go check the victory margin for Mr. Kramer. That was upwards of 100,000 Native Americans whose votes were suppressed, and Mr. Kramer won by 35,000 and change.
Yeah.
So that ostensibly could have made a significant difference if 35% of those Native Americans were able to actually vote.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it takes is 35%. Unreal. Absolutely unreal. One of the other, I think Rex mentioned this just a little while ago, about having
the voting should be a holiday.
Yeah, voting should be a holiday. That's sort of been thrust into the public conversation by Democratic rep and new freshman in Washington, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And
if you aren't already sick of hearing about her.
Yeah, Rex has had his fill, though he agrees with her policy-wise.
Definitely more power to her, and I think that she's going to be a great change in Washington. But unfortunately, I think that the Republican side has kind of made her the target of a lot of what they hate about Democrats.
Vitriol.
She's essentially the millennial version of Nancy Pelosi to them.
Well, she's the first Democratic socialist to ever be elected to American office.
She's incredible. And the youngest congresswoman.
Yeah, youngest congresswoman
at 29.
Ever. She couldn't afford her Washington, D.C. apartment because mm-hmm. she had to quit her job as a bartender to run.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know of really that many people who could afford a Washington, D.C. apartment, to be
fair.
Honest with you.
I couldn't.
Even if you were a fairly well-off middle-class individual. But
yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, outside of the fact that she's been kind of thrust in the limelight and people have been really talking about her quite a bit, which I think is good,
but also
it's kind of one of those things you're just like, oh, man.
Enough is enough already.
Another one of these articles. But she's proposed that essentially you set aside a day and make it a holiday for voting. Specifically, you set aside Columbus Day, which is an interesting topic in itself, you know?
Yeah,
I mean,
and that's a holiday that's been historically known for being kind of, depending on who you talk to, I mean, it could be viewed as outright offensive, but
yeah,
in terms of the slaughter of indigenous people, you know, Columbus mm-hmm. Day has been the,
kind of represents that.
Yeah. That idea of the
Inquisition
white man coming in,
that, you know, the
everything.
White people had here in the United States. And I think it's well-founded to say that it is.
Yeah. I mean, the facts back that up, but the matter is, you know, we could take a holiday that's mired in such historical tragedy
mm-hmm.
and replace it with an election holiday.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just all yeah, I mean, and two
that was
one stone.
Kind of her tongue-in-cheek proposal to somebody, and this was kind of back and forth over Twitter, is she mentioned that we should have a holiday specifically set aside for voting, and I don't even know who it was here. It was
some no-name with a blue check mark.
Yeah, exactly. It made kind of a witty remark about how, oh, she hasn't even gotten to Washington. She already wants more days off or something. And she proposed that, oh, well, how about we get rid of Columbus Day and we institute a national voting holiday? So, you know, I don't think she's really gunning for removing Columbus Day, although I think that maybe she will probably try and work on something like that. But
yeah, well, again, that was just sort of the two birds with one stone mindset. I mean, at the very least, you know, bringing it back to what we're talking about is we as a country would have a much greater voter turnout across the board for both parties if people were able to not have to go to work and vote, or if they had, you know, dedicated time on the weekends where some of these mm-hmm. polling stations were open where they could go vote early.
Or if you could just mail in your ballot.
Yep. Well, and that's actually a big feature of, you know, my state that I'm a resident of, Arizona. They are incredibly huge on mail-in ballots. I was able to get my ballot 2 weeks before the election, filled it out in a couple hours, sent it in, no problems. And I was able to go online and verify that
that had been counted,
was received, and that my signature was verified and that they counted it. Yeah. It should be that simple and that easy for every state.
But and again, in Oregon, it's similar here where you mail your ballot in. And if you don't mail it in prior to election day, it's really simple. There's drop-off locations everywhere.
Yep. Well, and Oregon has motor voter registration too, right? If you
have a driver's license,
you're now a registered voter. Congrats. Even if you don't vote, you're on the rolls. Well, and that brings us back to another suppression tactic, is conveniently changing people's registration. They're kicking them off the voter rolls.
Well, you haven't voted in a couple elections. Yeah, you're no longer registered to vote. Sorry.
Georgia and I think to a lesser extent Florida were definitely guilty of that in the 2018 midterms, where if you hadn't voted in the last like one or two cycles, I mean, the last like 4 years, they just kick you right off. You have to re-register and then possibly use a provisional ballot to vote. And those are another subsection of voter suppression, with provisional ballots and whether they even get counted or not. So,
yeah, it's not a whole lot you think you can do about it, but there are some things. And I think we were going to talk about that a little bit now, is, you know, what is it we can change about how they take our vote away from us,
right,
and allow us to, you know, be more assured. And when we cast a ballot, that it's going to be counted. You know, Stacey Abrams being kind of the spear of this, after she lost her Georgia election, she didn't concede per se. She actually stood up and said, "I acknowledge that I've lost.
All right.
But it's because the vote was suppressed here in Georgia, rather."
Well, and like you said, the first step to making a change in all of this is a public awareness and bringing it into the discussion, and how these tactics aren't going away, and how, you know, just as the facts show us, one party holds on to their power through these tactics. And if you work towards eliminating some of these tactics, some of these misdrawn maps, some of these restrictive voter laws, that not only will people be more, you know, franchised and be able to go out and make their voice heard, that it's sort of like a positive feedback loop, where the more you work towards getting rid of it, the more able you actually are going to be able to. You know, you energize the grassroots and you get people out.
So, yeah, she launched this nonprofit called Fair Fight Georgia, which she's using to actually sue the Georgia Secretary of State. Let me double check on that.
The new one or the old one?
I believe it would be the new one, whoever's stepping in for Kemp. But she's using that to sue Georgia and essentially have them admit that what they're doing right now is suppressing the vote of, you know, people in Georgia, and just kind of like thrust it into the limelight, you know, like you said there.
Yeah. One, this is kind of half and half of problem and solution, but this is something else we saw in these midterms, are the lawsuits to stop the ballot counting that happened in quite a few states. The one that comes to mind for me is Arizona, where as soon as Martha McSally had a lead with 99% reporting, she sued to stop the vote count, trying to claim victory. But then as they kept counting, you know, Kyrsten Sinema pulled ahead, and then she suddenly dropped her lawsuit very conveniently, saying, "No, please count the votes. So I want to count my votes just in
case
I pull ahead
again."
Right
after she was ahead. No. Don't worry about it. Go ahead and count every one of those votes.
Yeah, I think that happened in another state too, where Republicans sued to try and stop the counting. And that is antithetical to the foundation of voting. We want every single vote to be counted. And that's what Stacey Abrams is advocating for with her nonprofit as well, is making sure that every person has the ability to go out and vote, and that once they've done that, every single vote is counted, even if it takes a while, even if we're not calling the race, you know, 3 hours after the polls close.
Yeah.
Every vote needs to be counted. And so I think for us and for our listeners, what we can do is vote people in who agree with that notion and make that a more central issue to who you vote for. You know, do you support expanding the Voting Rights Act? Do you support making sure that every American, regardless of ideology, is able to go out and cast a ballot and actually have it count?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there's candidates out there who are making this their main tenet, or one of their main tenets, their platform. One of the big things that the new Democratic Congress, or House, sorry, has said that they're going to be launching is a reform on the Voter Rights Act. And I think we mentioned that earlier.
Yeah.
that they're going to try and put those teeth back in that bill that were removed back in 2013.
I'm not necessarily sure they'll be able to force federal approval upon every single state again.
Right.
But what they will probably be able to do, assuming they can pass it and get it signed into law, is specifically call out some of these tactics and outlaw them federally.
Mm-hmm.
To where, in that case, we're not telling the states what they should do, but we're sort of telling the states these tactics or these specific actions prevent people from enacting their rights. And as a consequence, you can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, the mentality or the mindset that Democrats need to take going forward in terms of, you know, their messaging and how they get this out there is, we want everybody to have the right to vote, and we're trying to ensure that that's not taken away from a single voter, regardless of party.
Yep. Yeah, I think that's just one of the many platforms that 2020 we're going to see. That's going to be a big one, amongst other things. I mean, and I don't think we've really touched on it, but in terms of this being Alternative Lies, where we debunk fake news, one of the biggest things that have come out of this 2018 cycle has been the antics of Donald Trump.
And his other grifter cronies in the White House.
Yeah, every time the man opens his mouth, it's lies. And unfortunately, about 45% of this country doesn't think that. But it's true.
Or just conveniently ignores
them. Conveniently ignores it because they get their policies through.
Right.
But interesting enough, when Florida was going to the recount, Trump was demanding widespread voter fraud had occurred and that things were being falsified and that people were actually voting and then going into their car, changing their outfit, and then going back to the polling station and voting once again. Take a note that none of this has been proved in any way. In fact, that the Florida government has denounced voter fraud happened in any substantial capacity multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
Yet you have a president who sits and tweets at 3 a.m. about, oh, rampant voter fraud, this, that, and the other thing. You know, and even after he lost the popular vote in 2016, he demanded that was because there was millions of individuals who had voted illegally in the election.
Yeah, he blamed it on the Mexicans, I think, specifically. Essentially,
yeah, I think on Latinos and Hispanics. And demanded that they had falsified their votes or that illegals were voting and formed this election committee with, I think, what, Chris Kobach as the head?
Yep, that was the former Secretary of State of Kansas.
Right.
Who just recently lost
his governor election for the state of Kansas.
Thank goodness. But you know, Chris Kobach was widely regarded as another, you know, architect, as stupid as he was. I mean, the man has had, in a court of law, had a judge tell him that he's not the brightest bulb in the box. But Chris Kobach was one of those voices after 2016 who was screaming, even in the face of Trump's alleged victory, mm-hmm. that there was still widespread voter fraud.
Oh, gosh. And, you know, they formed this committee.
I think Kobach, Mike Pence, and somebody else.
Yeah, they did some,
let me pull that up.
I don't know, offhand investigating. I don't even really know if they accomplished anything except for demanding that states give them their voter registration logs.
Yeah, it was the Commission on Voter Fraud enacted by Donald Trump, Chris Kobach. I know Mike Pence was part of it, and I'll comb through this article, but I believe it disbanded in March of 2018.
Right, when all of the states pushed back on this and just said that we're not giving you our voter registration logs.
They wanted names, addresses, dates of birth, political affiliations, and the last 4 digits of social security numbers, along with right. voting history, along with felony records, along with voter registration records
and
that overlapped in
other
states.
And can I get those 3 digits on the back of your credit card?
And then there's that date.
Expiration date, month, year.
Uh-huh. And then maybe mother's maiden name, chest.
Okay,
to be really sure.
Can I get... I mean, Equifax already knows this, so it's really no secret.
Well, they've been hacked. It's already out on the dark web.
Yeah, I mean, that's just why it would be easier if you just give it to me right
now. You know, honestly, they would have had a better time in court if they literally argued that because Equifax and other companies have released all this information into the public domain by hacking, that they should be entitled
to it
as the government.
They should be legally entitled to it.
But so, unfortunately, neither would hold up, of course.
You know, I mean, this is just something that perpetuates this whole idea that voter fraud has occurred. And in reality, it's just, I think, misdirection.
Projection. The P
and projection.
Of GOP.
You know, there's nobody going into their car and putting on one of those silly large noses with the plastic mustache attached to the glasses, you know, and going back into the voting stations and casting their ballot again as Mr. Hans Gruber, or some ridiculously fake name like that.
I see you're making a Jacob Wall reference to his intelligence operation filled with actors and completely not real people.
Now that's a smart man.
Well, that's a topic for our conspiracy episode, because my God, you could probably just do an entire episode on that guy alone.
Oh, jeez.
But yeah, I mean, the Republican Party really claims that among, you know, a Jim Carrey master of disguise sort of setup, the Democrats are, you know, bussing in people from other countries and other states to vote.
They're flying them in from Canada.
And everyone's getting paid by George Soros. Honestly,
I mean, man's too busy running ping pong pizza. He's got other things to do.
Yeah,
so
he's too busy with the child sex trafficking operation that was going on with Hillary in 2016.
Right. I don't know how he could ever have time to bust illegal voters in from out of
the
country.
He paid for all the protesters since 2016. He's paid for busing in voters, allegedly.
I knew this man had deep pockets, but geez.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for my Soros bucks in the mail. I don't know about you, Rex.
Maybe I should write him a letter and say, could you please, sir, just give me some money?
It's like one of those like old chain emails where, you know, oh, Bill Gates is looking to give away $5,000, but you have to forward this email to 10 people. It's like that, but George Soros now. George Soros is looking to bust in 10,000 voters, but 10, only 000. If you send this text message to 10 of your friends.
Yeah. Help defraud the voters of the United States. I don't know what the message would say there, but yeah, I mean, nobody is walking into the polling stations dressed as the turtle from Master of Disguise and going,
turtle, voter,
you know, I mean, that's not happening, you know, it's just not what is going on. And I mean, and whatever is floating around this deluded president of ours, I can't imagine what wires he's crossed to make that thing, reality.
I think a lot of it was just him being upset. And I think the more insidious conspiracy that they brought in was that Democrats keep magically finding votes in these, some of these, you know, too close to call races where Democrats started pulling ahead, and how they're, you know, magically pulling Democrat voters out of thin air.
Yeah. Well, interesting enough,
just counting votes.
Broward County in Florida was again the target of the recount, and a lot of the votes that were not necessarily accounted for right away. There's some funny stuff going on in Broward County.
Yeah, Broward County is a hot spot for voting antics. One, because it's a liberal county in Florida and it makes a lot of the difference in terms of their elections, but some of the local officials there have been notoriously lax on their, you know, their procedures and their validation of some of the results. So that certainly factors into the absolute bizarre world that is the Florida elections.
Yeah. I mean, that was one of the counties that was attributed to the Hanging Chads event in 2000 with the Bush-Gore election. In this 2018 election, they were back at it again. And actually, I don't even think they got their machine recount submitted in time.
Yeah, they didn't make that. They missed the deadline.
They missed the
deadline.
Yeah. I thought it was a lot closer than that. I thought that I heard...
Actually, no, I think it was 2 minutes.
2 minutes.
Yeah, no, it was 2 minutes. You're
that
right.
They had completed the machine recount, and then they went to upload the data to whatever system that Florida was using to, you know, track this machine recount.
Right.
And they did that 15 till whenever the deadline, and it got hung up and finished submitting the data just 2 minutes after the deadline.
Yeah, well, and that's a bit arbitrary and capricious to reject all of those results because of a 2 minute delay. Like that's ridiculous.
I mean, if you ain't first, you're last.
Apparently that's the mentality the Republican Party's taking. But
I guess so.
and kind of coincides with how vitriolic they've been about the whole thing. But yeah, as far as how do we fix all this? I mean, we already kind of touched on one, voting for people who agree that it needs to be fixed. Two, the fact that there just needs to be more Democrats to actually sign legislation into law in future elections, 2020 being the next one on the horizon.
Yeah.
And then I think what most people don't really think about and they take for granted is that even once you vote these people in, you got to hold them accountable, you know, light that
absolutely
fire underneath their butt.
You know, if they're not, you know, doing the will of the people, then they shouldn't be in office.
Yeah. I mean, if you're, you know, local Congress critter has town halls, which is a predominantly Democratic phenomenon since Republicans are avoiding confrontation at all costs because they know their policies suck. But definitely attend those if you can. If not, call your local congressperson. I would recommend starting with their Washington, D.C. offices. You can go to Google, type in, you know, who is my congressperson? You'll get all of their contact information, and definitely keep at them, because, you know, for example, back when the ACA repeal was being pushed and John McCain was still alive to do something about it, you know, he was one of the people that I spent quite a long time calling, probably multiple times a week, to say, you know, this legislation will be devastating to a lot of people. You should really think long and hard about this vote. And clearly he didn't, with that dramatic thumbs down.
Yeah, he was the determining vote there.
Exactly.
Songbird McCain.
Yep.
Sorry, I couldn't help myself. That was actually what Donald Trump said about John McCain. Of course, everyone knows he was a war hero, and he did spend some time as a prisoner of war.
Right.
And Trump and his just
Republican cronies.
Republican, you know, I don't even know how to put it, because it's really difficult to put what Trump is into words.
Yeah, there are four-letter words that we can't repeat.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, John McCain was a target of a lot of Trump's criticism and a generous amount of just distasteful things were said, one being that he likes prisoners of war or soldiers that weren't captured.
And how
they used to call him Songbird John because he told all of the Vietnamese soldiers American secrets.
Which didn't happen, by the way.
Right. You know, I mean, just unbelievable things about a pretty stand-up guy. And I mean, you know, our policies, my beliefs and his policies didn't really align.
I didn't like him as a politician, as an Arizona resident, but he seemed like he was at least a decent person at heart.
Right.
And that's what I think most of America would agree with.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, it does make a difference, or at least from that anecdotal story, you know, it does make a difference. And I'm sure that John McCain got thousands and thousands of calls like that influenced his choice.
If I remember correctly, I think one call is worth the opinion of, I think, maybe 100 or 1,000 voters, depending on the district, simply because, you know, not every constituent doesn't call in all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So making your opinion heard can be more impactful than just you, because that sort of goes towards, you know, percentages and how, you know, a certain percentage of voters in this district feel this way about a certain issue. That could really sort of paint a clearer picture for that politician of how their constituents want them to vote.
Absolutely.
So again, voting, keep at your congressperson. And then as far as you on an individual basis, what you can do, I would definitely recommend vigilance. I would definitely keep an eye on your voter registration to make sure none of those convenient little accidents happen
prior
to you.
The election. Double check. I mean,
triple
I'm very fortunate
even.
Here in Oregon. It's very easy to check your registration. You know, all you need to know is your name, your full name, and your date of birth.
Yeah, your personal information. And I think
that's it. Your full name and date of birth.
Yeah, I think I know for Arizona, I need a bit more. I either need like the last four of my social or like a voter ID number.
Yeah.
But a lot of states make it easy for you to check that. I believe you can go onto your state Secretary of State website, and there should be information on either new voter registration or checking on existing voter registration, something that I was able to do for Arizona multiple times before the most recent midterms. So that would be definitely something to stay on top of, is making sure your registration's up to date.
Yeah, leading up to the election, I double-checked and realized that I was still registered to vote in a different county, which I don't currently live in, and it was very straightforward to change. I mean, it was just as simple as typing in my new information online, and they sent me a new ballot.
Yeah, it's easier than making a Facebook post, honestly. Mm-hmm.
I mean,
it takes 5 minutes.
That's here in Oregon. It's not necessarily the case in other states.
So, Arizona, it's definitely that easy. I know I changed my mailing address, and that was a simple, you know, 5-minute change, and they sent me a confirmation email after I did it. So it's very straightforward in most states, and it might be a bit more arduous in some of the states that are more known for voter suppression, but that's why we recommend doing that ahead of time, so that way everything is situated and taken care of by the time you're ready to cast your vote.
You don't walk in and you're surprised about why you have to cast an absentee ballot
or provisional ballot
ridiculous reason or what have you.
Don't get blindsided by voter suppression.
Absolutely.
That's the take-home message, is you can be your own advocate, and then you can try to advocate for others by who you vote for.
Mm-hmm. And then the last final point is vote twice.
Make sure you bring your disguises to the polls, everybody.
Bring thousands of disguises, actually. You know, they're just not going to notice you.
Well, everyone on the George Soros voter bus is going to need a disguise too, Rex.
Yeah, yeah. Hats work really well. Ski masks.
Oh, balaclavas.
Balaclavas. Yeah, I mean, any number of thing to cover your face up so that it looks like you're robbing the place when you go into the vote.
Or, colored contacts. That would be a good one.
Oh,
too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Different put in one colors, of those cat person. Eye contacts.
I'm actually a cat and I'm voting.
Hey, I mean, it's 2018. You can identify however you want, man.
Today on election day, I identify as an animal and now I vote.
And now I vote. Cat's rights.
That's the old slippery slope argument. First the gays and then the animals.
Yeah, good old stand-up politicians over on the Republican side. That's probably why they don't like homosexuals so much.
Dear Lord, what have we come to as a country?
But no, I think Marcus made some phenomenal points. Of course, don't vote twice. That's not something
that's
we're advocating
a bad thing.
For.
Don't
it was
do
just
that.
We're
being
a
sarcastic.
Joke. But you want to keep on this, and you want to elect people that will identify with your beliefs, and that's what it all comes down to.
Yeah, we want to put the best of us in Washington to actually do something about the issues that face us. One of them being voter suppression. So again, make sure the people you vote for are more apt to let you and your friends vote.
That sounds good. Thanks for listening. This has been Alternative Lies.
Yeah, episode 2 in the books. We still have yet to hash out a topic for next week. We will be recording and releasing every 2 weeks for the sake of easier editing and researching. So with that being said, you can have a rough idea of what to expect from us, and hopefully this one was a bit less rough around the edges as we get acclimated to the podcasting studio.
Yeah, absolutely.
And again, a big thank you to KBVR Corvallis for letting us record in their studio in their nice fancy building with their nice fancy microphones.
Mm-hmm. And a big thanks to all the people who tune in and listen to us talk for a long time.
Hour and 5 minutes pre-edit. So that's quite a while. Thank you for spending some of your minutes with us here today, tonight, this morning, whenever you happen to be tuning in. And with that, I'm Marcus.
And I'm Rex. And thanks for listening.
This has been Alternative Lies, episode 2.